So the spiritual theme of the month is God. And I want to start by saying, I don't really know. Don't really know what to say for sure about God. And if you're visiting our congregation, that could be construed as a Unitarian Universalist joke. Or you could know that it's not a joke. For many of us in our congregation, we really identify with a statement made by Rumi, an ancient mystic from Persia, who said that all words are fingers pointing to the moon. And we get confused when we think that the fingers themselves are the moon. So when we're talking about issues of ultimacy, let's say the moon or God or the meaning of life, we do the best we can with the words that we have in our command. So personally, I do have thoughts and feelings about God, but I do not know with all certainty that my thoughts and feelings about God add up to the capital T truth about the universe. I didn't get that in seminary. I didn't have to have it in order to get ordained as a minister in our faith tradition. And I'm really not sure that I even have the best words to use. I thought since I'm using fingers to point at the moon, I could also just give a little movement. I say, here's my God movement choir. I could just end it there, but I won't. I'll say we Unitarian Universalists do believe in exploring and proclaiming good news about matters of ultimacy and transcendence, including the meaning of life and God. And I'll tell you this, learning about the monarch butterflies, I thought about God. Monarchs are one of the best known butterflies in the world. They have orange wings and a classic black and white pattern that I think most everybody would recognize. Many fascinating aspects of them. They, I think, like most all butterflies, but they have a lifespan of less than 2 months. And a little sad. Lori's sad by that. And they tend to be in groups, very large groups, up to hundreds of thousands, if not millions, at one time. So that when they were together at that time, and the character in the novel Della Robbia saw them all exploding off into flight, she saw this as a vision of glory that allowed her to see straight through to the back of herself. The beauty of the monarchs looked like the inside of joy itself. On this continent, most of the monarchs winter in Mexico. And at winter's end, the elder butterflies in Mexico rouse themselves and mate like crazy. Then the pregnant females go by themselves as far north as they can. Most of them get into Texas, and they are looking for milkweed, which is the only food that their larvae offspring can feed on. They give birth to larvae, which become caterpillars, which become butterflies. And I think there's one more stage, which I'm skipping. But when they get to the milkweed plants, they give birth to the larvae, and then they themselves die. The larvae and then the caterpillars eat the milkweed, grow up, become beautiful butterflies, and go up to the next place they're going to, the next station. And there, the baby caterpillars grow up into gorgeous butterflies, and they continue the mating, laying eggs, and dying process. Eventually, the larvae become butterflies and begin the trek south again. At times, in packs of hundreds of thousands, and they go to the same central mountain range in Mexico where they've been going for decades. They return as a group to exactly where their ancestors have gone for decades, but not a single one of the living monarchs have ever been to. But they go back to, how do they know? Barbara King's, the scientists to this date cannot say with certainty how they know where to go. Barbara Kingsolver writes that the monarchs are a living flow, like a pulse through veins, with the cells bursting and renewing as they go. Wow. Awe-inspiring miracles of nature. When we pay attention, awe-inspiring miracles of nature are endless, like the fact that we are all here, living human beings right now, breathing, understanding and feeling each other, sharing thoughts and feelings in community, right? It's just a miracle if we think about it. Pay attention. From the Big Bang to the formation of hot liquids and solids on our planet, at some point life began in the waters. Those cells eventually made it out onto the land and continued the reproducing and evolving. Since then, there have been strange and exotic plants, snakes, frogs, crocodiles, shellfish, corals, insects, and butterflies. Eventually, monkeys and apes developed, and we come right out of their line as Homo sapiens. And who knows what's next? Wow. Awe-inspiring miracles of nature. Kristen and I took our honeymoon in New Zealand, the last country in the world to be formed geologically. We visited the southeast where they have 14 fjords. A fjord is a long, narrow inlet of sea with steep sides gouged out by a glacier. We went to Milford Sound, which was scraped out by a glacier 20,000 years ago. When the ice melts, the sea comes in and fills the fjord where we were. The water was, we were told, under us, under the boat, almost 1,000 feet deep, this dark, magical water. And up above it, these steep cliffs comes with this plethora of wildlife everywhere. Wow. Awe-inspiring miracles of nature. Now, the theme of the month is God. And you notice I'm talking about nature, life, and God all together. These are examples, in my opinion, of how many of us Unitarian Universalists do theology. So let's talk about how we do theology. This is how we do it. This is how we do it. This is how we do it. Okay, if you're visiting from Christ Lutheran, we, Unitarian Universalists, have a wide variety of words that we use about the ultimate. Many of us say God or light, nature, life, spirit of life, or love. For some of us, these words in many ways are interchangeable. I love the Quaker and Hindu ideas that all living things have the light of God in them. In this way of seeing, we have a refulgent or shining God. Refulgent means shining. A refulgent God that is present in us and around us and throughout the planet and probably beyond. As God, light, life, and love are in us and around us, we are probably more like the monarch butterflies than we usually think or admit. Think of human reproduction. A sperm and an egg join together, begin to multiply. Eventually, they develop into a human baby. At some point, the mother's body and the baby decide it's time for the birthing. You know, we say, well, I hope the baby's born by Easter. Good luck. Because the baby's going to, somehow, they're on their own. And who knows how. This reminds me of the mystery of the monarch immigration pattern. How does the baby know where to go and when? This is miracle and mystery and wonder, and I call it God, life, love, and light. I say there is a God life force that moves us and draws us. It's been going on at least since those cells that life formed in the waters, probably before, once again, like I started, I don't know. As I tell you some of my thoughts on God, I also want to clarify, we have a tremendously wide and rich array of beliefs and non-beliefs about God in our community. On the first Sunday of this month, I preached on humanism and the value of people who have no use of the word God or God. Now, I'm fortunate that in my role, I get to hear about many of your different thoughts and opinions on God through pastoral conversations and other interactions. And I know many of you have heard it too, but we want to spread the bounty. So here's the spiritual exercise of the month. This one was designed by two of our small group leaders, Beth Sprinkle and Jen Grau. This is for everybody here, right? Talk to a friend who you think has different beliefs about God than you do. You may or may not know who they are, but try to figure out who. And then try to suspend your beliefs about God, whether you're an atheist or an agnostic or a theist. Try and put your framework aside and ask the person what their view on God is and how they draw strength from their views and their beliefs. So as the other person describes her thoughts, just imagine that you're in her shoes, try to feel what she feels, and just listen deeply. So this is not a spiritual exercise of debate. You could talk after about what resonates, but just give each other the gift of sharing and listening. I believe as we grow in these conversations, you'll be amazed at how diverse opinions we have in this congregation and in our faith movement. But I will say we have some commonalities. So for most Unitarian Universalists who believe in God or find the concept helpful, it's a natural phenomenon for most of us. We don't believe in a supernatural God residing out there making decisions and controlling from out there what happens down here on earth. We believe that whatever we call God is within this cosmos and in nature. Reverend Galen Gingrich of All Souls New York has a book coming out, which I just read an opening article on, talking about the relationship between science and theology. Galen points out, among other things, that our naturalistic theologies mean that God is controlled by the same rules of nature that we are, like gravity here on Earth, or the theory of relativity, which applies to large-scale interactions among and within galaxies. God is within. And this is good to know. Theology and natural sciences have not always gone together very well, as most of you know. There are a lot of examples. The Scopes trial is one of them in Education in America. But when Copernicus proved that the Earth revolves around the sun, not the other way around, he and his colleagues were punished severely by the church. Copernicus actually died before the backlash fully hit. But his colleague, Giordano Bruno, this is 16th century, Bruno dared to say also that space is boundless and the universe may be home to many solar systems. He was burned at the stake by the church. Galileo was tortured and spent the rest of his life under house arrest. So in our modern era, it's a blessing to know science has a great, solid home in our church. If it doesn't make sense to what's being proven by the scientists, it usually doesn't last very long around here, and it really shouldn't. It's also good to know that in our naturalistic theology, God and light are used literally and as metaphors. There's a poetry in our theology. And within this framework, in many ways, we human beings are like plants with light. We are drawn to God, I believe. If you place a plant on the left side of the window, the plant grows towards the right, towards the light. You want to even it out, you move it to the right, it grows back towards the left. Whatever you call the mysterious powers of life, God, and love, we do our best when we open up and grow towards those powers. When we open up and receive light, we can grow, we're nourished. If we're hurt, we can heal, we can flourish. And when we close ourselves off to whatever that life force is, we can be less powerful in doing good for others. We can buy into the myth of saying we're separate and less than, not good enough. We all have our own experiences with God, light, nature, life, and love. One beloved family in our congregation went through an unimaginable tragedy when their daughter, Lady Bonanno, was murdered at the age of 21. Pretty, smart, kind, and loving. Lady had just been trained as a nurse, was ready to serve patients. She died way too young. Her brother Lou, her parents Kathy and Dave, survived her. They live on. She's in their heart. She's in our heart. They continued doing great things in her honor. Not long after Lady's death, Kathy wrote a poem. It's entitled A Poem About Light. And as I was developing the sermon, I just kept coming back to her poem, and I asked her permission to share it. You can try to strangle light. Use your hands and think you found the throat of it, but you have not. You could use a rope or a garrote or a telephone cord, but the light, amorphous, implacable, will make a fool of you in the end. You can make it your mission to shut it out forever, to crouch in the dark, the blinds pulled tight. Still, in the morning, a gleaming little ray will betray you, poking its optimistic finger through a corner of the blind, and then more light. Clever, nervy, impossible. Spilling out from the crevices, warming in the shade. This is the stubborn sun, choosing to rise, like it did yesterday, like it will tomorrow. You have nothing to do with it. The sun makes its own history. Light has its way. Light has its way. I just wish I could staple that poem right into the Hebrew Bible as a permanent addition. I love it because it talks about God and light and love to me. However you point at the moon, this poem reminds us that light has its way. And I think we must proclaim the glorious truth of this inextinguishable light which shines from within and around and upon us. Wow. Awe-inspiring miracles. Good news. Whatever you call God, the earth and all her creatures, the sun and the stars, they are all amazing. May this sacred time together remind us in the coming days to open towards the stubborn sun, which is choosing to rise like it did yesterday, like it will tomorrow. Pay attention, people. I'm telling you, don't miss out. A vision of glory awaits you. This earthly beauty can allow you to see through the back of yourself and to look right inside of joy. Blessings be. Amen.